Taking a look now at energy efficiencies and energy policies, Susan Stratton, our guest by phone today. She's executive director of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. It's helping to shape the future that taps efficiency as our nation's first energy resource. So being efficient, that's what we'll be talking about today, energy efficiency and energy policy with her. And we'll certainly be inviting your questions and comments as we go along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Susan Stratton, welcome.
Good morning, Larry. It's great to be here.
Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Tell us about the Energy Center of Wisconsin.
The Energy Center is a nonprofit based in Madison, although we work all over the Midwest on energy efficiency issues. We look at energy efficiency as the first choice in addressing energy needs. We conduct education and training. We do research. We provide technical assistance to people working in this area, and also analyze new policies and try to figure out how policymakers and other stakeholders can really get the best out of energy efficiency, not just to save money, but also to address our climate change issues.
And you have a new draft report out that finds a lot of potential for energy efficiencies here in Wisconsin. What is that potential?
That's right. We conducted the study for the Public Service Commission at their request, and we found that within a couple of years, we can work up to a level of saving almost 2% per year of electricity savings. And that's with a combination of utility or focus on energy type programs, with some innovative cost-based rates and some behavior change campaigns that will get people to change how they use energy.
So there's the 2% doesn't sound like a lot in a way, but that's a lot of energy.
It is a lot of energy. In the past, our energy use in Wisconsin has been growing about 1.5% a year, although a little bit less last year. So increasing our energy efficiency efforts would allow us to address all of that growth through new and innovative ways to either use technology or to conserve energy in a way that doesn't diminish from the value that we get from energy either in our homes or businesses.
Well, you could give us, I think, an example might be great. I know the Energy Center has been selected by ComEd of Chicago to design and administer its Smart Ideas for Your Business, a new construction design service. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. In fact, today is the exciting kickoff of that program. We're helping ComEd with all its commercial new construction in its service territory. We're helping to teach architects, engineers, and other people involved in that process how to build more energy-efficient buildings. Today, there's a lighting and daylighting design conference being held in Oak Brook. Over 100 people are attending this. And then we'll offer specific design assistance to people that are designing buildings at the front end to teach them how to build that building in the best long-term approach for energy efficiency. So we have a contract for several years to provide these services, and we're very excited about doing this in the Chicago area after years of doing the same thing here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. What would be an example of building design that might make an impact?
Well, certainly up front, before you even draw or conceive the building, thinking about the orientation on the site to maximize daylighting, but also thinking about the type of glass, the kind of building shell, the kind of HVAC system that will all work together to produce the most efficient building, perhaps even considering geothermal heat if that's possible on the site. We can model this with a computer and give the building owners some feedback on what the long-term cost of those investments would be.
And you have offered, I think, a similar service for Focus on Energy and customers of We Energies, I believe, for quite a while.
We did a three-year program for We Energies, and we're continuing to do this also for WPPI Energy. And we also offer it. We're one of the providers under Focus on Energy, so that would be provided across the state. So we've done this service for a few years, and just in the last year, for example, the service that we provided improved energy efficiency in about 3.6 million square feet of new construction. The savings were almost 7 million kilowatt hours just in 1 year, and about 750,000 therms of natural gas. So it's no small thing to get those energy savings built in up front with commercial new construction.
Well, and you know, the kind of the good thing about this, one of the good things about this from my perspective is that we're not only saving energy, but it makes good business sense, too.
Absolutely. That's one of the key things we want to emphasize with the people we work with. It's not just the first cost of the building. It's the long-term cost. Whether you're going to be in the building or leasing it out, there's a real benefit to having low energy costs over the life of the building.
Yeah. To what extent do you work with homeowners themselves?
Well, most of our services are provided to practitioners that work for homeowners.
Okay.
For example, every year we have a conference at Wisconsin Dells for people that work in the residential construction and remodeling trades. This past year we had close to 900 people attend our event to learn how to build greener homes, to learn how to do better remodelings that incorporate both energy efficiency and renewable energy. And so then those folks go out and help the homeowners. Homeowners can also contact Focus on Energy for very specific information about how to save energy. And that site, they can find it online at focusonenergy.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Interviewed Ed Begley, who participated in that conference, and it was fun to talk with him.
Yeah, he's a fun guy. We're glad to have him at the conference.
Susan Stratton, our guest, Executive Director of the Energy Center of Wisconsin, as we talk with her about energy efficiencies and energy policy. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. I mentioned energy policy, and let's talk a little bit about energy policy and some of the good and maybe some of the not so good.
I've been involved with our Governor's Task Force on Climate Change in Wisconsin. And legislation that may come from those recommendations is being crafted now. I'm not a part of that drafting, but was a part of the discussions on trying to assemble a portfolio of approaches to address climate change. There's a real balancing act between trying to figure out how to produce low-carbon energy and still keep our economy moving forward, obviously in this very difficult time. I'm doing something similar with the Midwestern Governors Association. In fact, that's why I'm here calling you today from Lansing, Michigan, working with some folks, some national experts on how smart grid could help us, or smart grid components could help us accelerate energy efficiency. There's lots of unknowns out there about how technologies could help us and how much those would cost. And that's the biggest balancing act that policymakers have right now, especially in the current economic conditions.
When you talk about smart grid, someone might ask, what do you mean by that?
Well, and that's the $60,000 question. Smart grid means a lot of things to a lot of people. Most of all, it means some smart meters that talk to the utility and pass information both between the utility and customer, and also allows the customer to manage energy more explicitly, manage devices in the home, perhaps generate energy at the customer site and put it back on the grid. So it allows us to control all of those things and ultimately will help us, give us some feedback about the energy we're using and how much that costs. And that's what we're finding is one of the most effective things in getting customers to change their approach to energy, is giving them that immediate feedback. Just like you might get on a Prius, that nice readout that helps you understand how you're driving and how much it costs. Well, that same kind of thing can be available through smart grid technologies, or at least smart meters. Smart grid typically means a whole panoply of things. The most important part of that is the communication through a smart meter that gives immediate feedback to the building owner or homeowner to let them know how much they've spent or how much they're spending, how much it costs at that moment, and how they might manage their load to get the better price for electricity.
We purchased, my wife and I purchased a 2010 Toyota Prius, and we're driving it around. You know, it was brand new. And
oh, you've got the new one. Great.
We've got the new one, and I've mentioned to her that all cars, it would be nice if all cars had that sort of energy efficiency little screen, even if it was a 400 horsepower vehicle that you could see, because it really does affect your how you drive the vehicle when you can see that mileage going way up or way down.
Absolutely, and that's absolutely what we need to move towards in the electricity area. Use your appliances and your lighting and your computers all month, and at the end of the month you get a bill, and it's hard to match that with what was causing so much energy use.
Right.
So the kind of more immediate feedback, either through the internet or some other in-home display, could be very helpful for people in not just managing their energy, but you know, managing their checkbook.
Let's go to Daryl in Bloomington. Daryl, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I think your estimate of 2% is way off base. I've been an air conditioning tech for way back in 1970 era, and actually, if you educate the homeowners on how to reduce their use of energy, you can cut it in half or more on the homeowners, because you can hang dry your clothes. Your dryer and your hot water heater and those type of things use a lot of electricity. And also your house infiltration rate, air infiltration rate, that can be 50% of the heat load on your air conditioner and for your heating in the winter. And all you got to do is cut that way down.
Well, you're making some good points here, and just before our break here, thanks, Daryl, for calling. A comment, Susan?
Daryl is absolutely right. Just to be sure people understand, the 2% is each year. But Daryl is right. There's a lot more gains to be made if we could go into everybody's home and change out everything, you know, put the most efficient air conditioning in, check for all the air filtration, insulate, et cetera. So we're looking at certainly the kinds of programs that could move that forward, so that consumers can save energy. The behavior change items, such as hanging your clothes outside, that's going to take a little bit more work to get people back outside to hang their clothes up. But certainly we're looking at 2% as an overall average for the system. But we know that there's quite a bit more out there. So that's why we think 2% is very, very achievable.
Susan Stratton, our guest, Executive Director of the Energy Center of Wisconsin, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking energy efficiencies and energy policies now on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with my guest by phone, Susan Stratton, Executive Director of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Really pleased to have her with us, and certainly happy to have you listening in. Give us a call with a question at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And we have a number of callers online, Susan, so I want to go right to the phones here and to Justice in Brookfield next. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Oh, great topic. I just had a question regarding, you had mentioned commercial and residential construction. I'm just wondering if you're working to help in developing products or not just techniques with existing means of building commercial and residential properties, but you know, help developing some of the new innovative ways to in the manufacturing side of the products that will be used to build the buildings.
You know, we're not doing that research on site at the Energy Center, but we welcome people that are working in that area to participate in some of our training and outreach programs, in particular our B4 program. We're always looking for more innovative technologies and techniques so that we keep that program to be very much cutting edge on energy efficiency. And you can find out about that program on our website, www.ecw.org, and look for the B4 program. If you know of people that are working on new products or techniques, have them contact us so they can be a part of that program.
I guess that kind of leads to my second question. How much do you see in the industry? Meanwhile, I think people want to, there's room to grow for a lot of manufacturers in the industry. There's money to be made in that sort of realm, but is there still room to grow in that capacity for the manufacturer?
Absolutely. I mean, we're looking at, for example, California has mandated that all residential homes in 20 or so years be zero net energy, so that they're built to produce as much energy as they consume. There are techniques and products out there now to almost get us to the zero net energy. However, home building has slowed down a bit in this economy, but I see this as a time for a lot of us who work in the field and who are developing products to think about new techniques. And here in Wisconsin, we've got a bigger challenge, certainly with our climate, but we can get pretty close. And I think that things will continue to move on, especially as energy prices move up in the future.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Betty in Oak Creek next. Betty, hello to you.
Hello, too, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What I can't understand, these new homes that are being built in these developments, they do not have that new technology with no tanks, water heater.
Oh, tankless water heaters?
Tankless water heaters. Now, you would think, this day and age, that would be a plus. Also, these homes in these associations, you cannot have a clothesline out. So there's no way you can dry your clothes outside. Condos as well. No clotheslines, no gardens. They're restricted. I think we're going to have to change that and go back to the older days when I was little,
mm-hmm.
where people were able to take advantage of the elements and to help our environment.
Well, thanks for calling. That's a policy kind of thing, isn't it, that Betty's talking about, Susan?
Right. She made two excellent points. I'll start with the clothesline. That's certainly something that can save a lot of money on drying, and I think the most important thing are residents in those kind of communities to get back to their association and say, hey, we can put up nice-looking clotheslines and save a lot of money, and it won't be a detriment to the neighborhood. So I think the thinking has to change on that, but residents and homeowners have to band together and get back to the association about that. On the tankless water heaters, we've had some discussion on that on staff. We have some experts in hot water heating at the Energy Center. And those tankless water heaters are absolutely fantastic. They give you water on demand, and the benefit of never running out of water is also a detriment. You never run out of hot water. I considered this, and I have teenagers who take a shower until the hot water is gone. And, of course, I'm sure I'm embarrassing them if they're listening. I thought I'll probably be spending more on hot water heating. But the bottom line is the tankless water heaters are great in some applications. However, they cost about $2,000 or about twice as much as a conventional gas hot water heater. So in a seasonal home that doesn't get much use, you might not be able to pay that back very quickly. You might want to use just a really good high-efficiency Energy Star gas water heater.
Mm-hmm.
So those tankless water heaters do have some great applications, particularly in new construction, but they are a bit pricey on the front end, saving money off over the long end if you don't have teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Betty, for calling. I want to give some others a chance to get in here. Let's turn to Margie in Franklin. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for the program. Very interesting. Your guest mentioned something about getting feedback on our energy usage, and it reminded me of how people can change when they understand the behavior that they're doing, like behavior modification or biofeedback. Biofeedback works really well with people that have stress and migraines and stuff because you get an immediate feedback on the beeper there as far as how you've changed your core temperatures and things like that to bring the stress down. So it would be great if there could be some kind of a unit that you could borrow or something to test things in your home. But even better yet, at the high school level, like Larry, you have that Prius. Mm-hmm. If a lot of those cars were donated to the driver's ed program, then teenagers would learn as they're going through driver's ed what the gas usage is in terms of faster, driving your car harder, mm-hmm. and for my son to put $5 in for gas, I mean, that really hurts. But he drives his car hard, and he doesn't believe that it makes a difference.
Well, interesting points here, Margie. Susan, a comment from you?
Yeah, I'm glad that Margie emphasized what I mentioned about feedback, because feedback does change how we use our energy. We're, in fact, testing across the state of Wisconsin right now for the Focus on Energy program a little portable power cost monitor that you can buy at the hardware store for about $100, $125, and that will read information off your meter and give you instant feedback about your energy use. These are not very sophisticated devices like you might expect on an internet-type screen, but it does give feedback. What we're doing is measuring to see what kind of effect that has on customer energy uses. Do we need to have a more sophisticated device, or is a real basic device important? So you might see some of these devices or feedback mechanisms being offered in the future through the Focus on Energy program. You may also see them offered. I know that WPS is considering some feedback trials in its service territory, and many of the other utilities are considering that as well. In Madison, MG&E has some feedback on the Internet about comparative bill use over time, but the most important thing is to get instant feedback so you can see the actions at that very moment and what they're causing in terms of energy use and cost.
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Margie, for calling. I appreciate your call. We give Kyle a chance in Appleton to participate. Kyle, hello to you.
Hi, great program. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I was watching TV a couple months ago, I think now, and I saw something on a green light switch. I was just wondering, how easy is that to install? Because it kind of gave you a read of how much energy you're using when everything's turned off, and then you could actually turn it into green mode and it would turn off all the LEDs on your toaster, your DVD player. How easy is that to do, and is it something that people could install and have using or could be using quite simply?
I didn't watch the same TV show that you did, Kyle, but I'm imagining that what you saw was an example of a dual system where you could shut down everything that's not essential as you walk out of the house and then kind of have a real baseload level. You get rid of phantom loads on equipment that draws power even when it's not in use. I think those kind of, if you're handy and an electrician, you might be able to do that yourself, but it's clearly something that could be incorporated in new construction with some planning. So retrofitting of a home is probably a bit costly, but certainly if you're handy and can do that kind of thing, you could at least draw in together some items that you want to be able to turn off very easily with one switch. And, for example, with your computers or entertainment equipment, putting them all on a single strip, one of those plug-in strips with one switch to turn them all off, is another, you know, very low-tech way
to
turn
do
off
it.
All those phantom loads without rewiring your home. So a couple of those around might also give you kind of a transitional way to do it short of building a whole new home.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks, Kyle, for calling. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Pat in Clayton next. Hi, Pat.
Good morning, Larry and Susan. Very interesting program. As I was listening, I thought of several things. I hang out laundry year-round, except when it gets down to about 40 below.
Yeah.
But, you know, so easy to do, but it's unfortunate that so many new communities do not allow clotheslines.
Right.
I guess they don't like to see clean laundry. I'm not sure why. Secondly, up in our area of the country, Northwest, Xcel Energy has home audits, energy audits.
Mm-hmm.
We got ours done. It was no charge. She gives you suggestions what you could do. Easy way to find out, you know, if there are things that you can do to help use less energy. But what I really wanted to call was ask about a question about when you drive through an area at night or fly over an area at night, you see so many places that have security lights. Do we need that many security lights? Could we get along with there? Would that make a marked difference in energy consumption by eliminating some of the energy lights?
Well, what do you think, Susan?
Well, Pat, that's a real good question. In fact, I do a lot of flying these days, and I fly over cities and see them just ablaze with lights. There's a couple of things here. It's not just security lights, but any outdoor lighting that is focused up to the sky is partially wasted light. And we have to get smarter about how these lights are configured so that the light shines down on the people or places that need to be lit. Security lights can be on a motion detector. I know I have those on my home. And also, the new outdoor lighting trend is towards LED lights. These use a fraction of the energy of the old technologies, and we'll see those more and more. There's a lot of demonstrations going on in municipal parking lots and municipal security applications. So bringing in LED lights, using motion detectors where appropriate, and just reconfiguring light fixtures so that they shine the light down, you will need less light. So we're seeing a lot of demonstrations to look at how that can be improved, but it's a big area of improvement. You're right to point that out.
Thanks, Pat, for calling. An email from Greg in Luxembourg says we're in the design phase of our green home, passive solar, daylighting, natural ventilation, and we're working with a designer builder. However, I'm struggling to engage an Energy Star consultant during the design phase versus after, which seems to be the norm. Is the best way to go about designing an energy-efficient home to engage the services of an Energy Star consultant before, after, or during the design? What do you recommend?
Oh, absolutely before. I'm sure that Focus on Energy would agree with that if you called them up and said, hey, I'm about to get started on this project. Much better to design it in than to have to figure out a retrofit once you've set the plans or have the house already created. I think that Focus Energy would be glad to offer an energy consultant to help you with that.
Rebecca in Platteville, it's up to you now. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. Well, my concern is I changed all my little light bulbs into the squiggly kind, and I insulated, and I watch my electricity use and feel good. And then I drive by a place like Menards in Platteville. Every appliance they have, every light fixture, and I don't care how many bulbs each fixture takes, thousands. They're all totally lit day and night. Every ceiling light is on. It's so bright you could see it from the space station, I'm sure. An energy audit from that place would probably be the energy uses of the entire county. I don't know how the other stores are, but don't they have to follow some kind of rules? It feels like all my efforts are worthless because they're using so much. It doesn't matter if it's beautiful daylight and they've got some sun coming from the sunlight. They never turn off half the lights, and mm-hmm. all those fixtures are running. And I think Menards is privately owned, so you can't yell at the shareholders. It's like, it just feels like a slap in the face.
Rebecca, I'm with you. I've seen a trend with the big box stores, and Walmart, surprisingly, has been a leader here in incorporating daylight and lighting controls in their store so that you'll have more daylight coming in through the roof and that the lights will automatically be turned down according to how much sun is coming in. And if you go into one of their newer stores, if you have an opportunity to, you'll see that. And it's less garish, less bright, but all the merchandise is very well lit. Each kind of retail store has specific needs for lighting merchandise. A jeweler may have different needs than a Menards. But clearly they can use daylighting or lighting controls or LED or compact fluorescent lights. I think if Menards were to look at the bottom line, they'd make a change pretty quickly. I think Walmart is seeing changes in the bottom line for its new stores.
Okay. Thanks, Rebecca, for calling. Appreciate your call. Chuck in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Chuck.
Great show.
Thank you.
Great show. Compliments. I'm calling in regard to off-peak electricity. Time-of-use metering, which is offered by, I believe, all the utilities. My home is Alliant Energy, and 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. is all off-peak and about a third of the cost. And my business, which out at Ashton Corners, which is MG&E, I saw and dry custom furniture wood, but that is off-peak electricity as well. So I'm reducing the daytime demand so we don't have to build additional power plants. And I'm using the electricity that they have to produce just to run anyway. And it's cheaper and conserves our resources.
Yeah.
In fact, I had this very same conversation with a person from the Edison Electric Institute this morning, and he said, clearly, with time of use metering, if you know how much it's costing, especially if the differential is big, you can shift a number of loads to the off-peak period, your dishwasher, your laundry, you know, any other thing that uses electricity, and really save a lot of money. It will also help the utilities delay when they have to build those large baseload plants. So that's good for the economy, good for your checkbook. Certainly, very good thing to do if everybody can get on more innovative rate structures that are either time of use or market based, kind of the next step after time of use. It'll really help us give us the kind of feedback and ability to manage our electric use and rates.
All right.
And the wonderful thing is, it doesn't cost anything to sign up for these programs with MG&E or Alliant, for example.
Yeah.
So thank you. Again, wonderful show.
All right. Thanks for calling. Norm in New Auburn, it's your turn. Hi, Norm.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
My suggestion is, well, I've been doing it now for about 20 years. I have four boxes up on my roof, which slopes toward the south. And in those boxes, I have about 400 feet of black plastic tubing, which heats my water. And there's a pump. And that pumps the water and a thermostat to turn it on when it gets hot up there. And I don't have to use a water heater all summer, which works real well.
Good plan. Susan? No,
Norm, that's a great low-tech way to have solar thermal water heating. Good for you. I hope it works pretty well for you. I actually do the same thing for my outdoor shower. I have a coil of black hose on the roof, and we never have to heat that water. So I see you do this in a larger scale for your whole home, so congratulations.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I know your study, your draft report, is pretty important to you. Can you talk a little bit more about that, what people might find in that report?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of information in the report, and I would encourage people that want to look at the details to download it from our website. But just in a nutshell, I was going to just mention a couple of the highest or most important items in each of the sectors for saving energies, and starting with residential, the place to look is the CFL replacement bulbs. Do that first. Then do the insulation. Then try to think about how you can get a feedback device in your home somehow, either low-tech or high-tech. Look at your furnace, and also common area lighting for apartment buildings. In the commercial sector, it's lighting and lighting controls. I mean, those are the big and most important things. And in the industrial sector, it's motors first, but also lighting as well. So lighting is a huge part of our electric load. So not just using a more efficient bulb, but having controls to make sure those lights dim or go down as the sun is shining, so we don't have lights going all day for no reason and not really giving us any more light than we're getting from the sun. We heard that from one of our callers. It's certainly very important. I'm also in the commercial sector. Cooling equipment, HVAC, and data centers are a huge user of energy. Those are the top things in the commercial area. And don't forget, in the residential area, a growing load is our plug load, our entertainment and computers. That's really growing quite quickly, and we expect that to be a significant part of load until we can figure out how to control that better.
Yeah, and walk around your house at night and see all those little lights on. It is really amazing, and part of that, as you say, those computer lights, if you're keeping the energy up on those computers, that's got to burn a lot of electricity.
It does, and we're doing a real extensive plug load study in the state of Minnesota, just looking at the loads from computers, plug loads, entertainment centers, and trying to figure out ways that we can help consumers manage those loads and also get information about how to design programs to help give customers simple ways to turn off that equipment so it's not using energy while it's not in use. There's some simple things people can do with strips and automatic off, or using things in a sleep mode. But there's a lot we don't know about how customers use these devices and how many people have. We're finding people have a lot more devices than we anticipated. We hope the results of this study can help design better programs, and we'd like to do some of these studies also in Wisconsin in the future.
Thank you, Susan. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Susan Stratton is Executive Director of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I want to take a couple of seconds just to remind you that we'll be at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association conference, or actually fair, I should say, in Custer, Wisconsin on Friday. Myself, Veronica Rickert, Ben Marins, and Gene Faraca will all be broadcasting from there on Friday, and so we're really looking forward to that and looking forward to seeing you there. So if you're thinking of coming, stop over to our tent. We'll be broadcasting from there. And thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.